listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a very terrific actor that we're welcoming back, Mr. Behzad Dabou. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, man. I've been hearing rave reviews about this play that you're in. I can't wait to see you in it. You've been kind of having a good year. You did the shorts with Malzum, and that was all over film festivals all over the country. Did you go to any of the film festivals?
I did. We went to IFLA in LA, but we also went to ISAF in Canada, which was a really good one in Vancouver. I went to that. That was really fun and spoke on some panels. But this play that I'm doing has been a decade in the making. And so it really feels kind of amazing to be doing it now. And I'm excited to talk to you about it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So let's talk about, like you said, a decade in the making. Were you a part of the creative process just to get it up and running? Was it an audition process that was like, it's going to be a 10-year audition, let's do this?
So this is one of my favorite playwrights. His name is Rajiv Joseph. His big break was that he wrote a play called Bengal Tiger that Robin Williams actually did on Broadway. It was Robin Williams' last performance on Broadway. That was maybe 15, 16 years ago, right before he died. And he wrote this play called Guards at the Taj in 2015. And I was in Chicago at the time and really wanted to do it and didn't get the chance to. So fast forward 10 years, this production that's happening at the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood, I'm producing it with my co-star Kausar Muhammad. Hey. I'm directing it myself. It's my directorial debut for a full stage show in L.A., and then I'm starring in it with Kausar. So Kausar and I are co-producers and co-starring in it. And we have two other producers, Amalia and my wife, Sana, and also an associate producer, Manju Bangalore. So it's an all South Asian team, wow. A 99% women team.
Wow.
And two things to mention about the play that are noteworthy is that Kausar is the first woman to play the role in the history of the production.
Wow.
And it's the first time this play is being done in less than 500 seats. It's usually done in sort of like large theaters with large budgets. And my concept for the play is a little more intimate and stripped down. So it's only 100 seats a night. But the flip side is it's hard to get tickets to get in. So you,
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I need to get my tickets now is what you're saying.
Yeah, your tickets now, yes.
We'll do that. I will do that tonight after this interview. Let me ask you. So you originally wanted to be in this play. What drew you to it? Was it the playwright? Was it the story? Was it a combination of all of it?
I think the story is so cool. So the story, the basic log line is that there are two guards in 1653 in India that are tasked with guarding the Taj Mahal on the day it's about to be revealed.
Wow.
And what people don't realize is for the Taj Mahal, they built a giant like wall around the ground so that nobody could see it until it was done. So you didn't see it like in construction phases. There was like a 50-foot wall built around it, which is wild. So these two guards are sort of like tasked with it. But what's interesting is the conversation they have is like everybody's coming in to look at the most beautiful building ever built at the time, but they're not allowed to look at it because they have to guard it. And so it's sort of it's a play that sort of riffs on Waiting for Godot, where it's two people talking about life and beauty and what it means to what is beauty. But then they're tasked with a really horrible thing that sort of shakes their friendship and shakes their lives forever that I don't want to spoil.
Okay. I love that. What a great premise, by the way.
Yeah. It's a really beautiful play.
It was like, you don't think of the historical part when you see the Taj, you think about like, oh, this is a tomb. It's kind of like the best love story, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, for people that don't know, the Taj is a tomb that a Maharaja dedicated to his wife. after she passed. And it is one of the most naturally, it probably is the most naturally beautiful thing I've ever seen built.
Yeah, it's gorgeous when you're there. Yeah.
So like just, but to think of a storyline of what the unveiling would be is already unique. So I just love that you kind of took this on. Now, nobody really knows what it is to take on such a task, to direct, to act. Let's take on each one of those roles.
Okay.
The first one you wanted to do. You wanted to act in it, I assume?
I wanted to act in it, yeah. So 10 years ago, I wanted to act in it. There's these two characters and they're opposites. One's a dreamer and one's a loyalist. One is all about beauty and one is all about duty. And so you have one character who's like, no, we have to do what we're supposed to do. We were told to do this. We're told to guard it. We're told to stand still. We're told not to talk and let's do it. And the other one is like, well, what if we look at it? What if we dream about it? Isn't this beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? So you already have this sort of like the artist and the soldier, you know, the dreamer and the loyalist. And so I always wanted to be in it as the dreamer. And I'm finally getting a chance to do that, which is so fun. And people who've come to it, we had our opening weekend last weekend. We had four sold out shows. I've had a blast doing it. I've had a real blast doing it. Now the second thing is producing it. We are independently doing this production. We're not doing it attached to a theater company. We rented the space. We're self-funding it and we're going out on a limb. Kosser and I and our partners we put the money up front, hoping that ticket sales can cover much of the cost. If it does, great. If it doesn't, okay. We've priced it accessibly. We're not doing the $300 ticket thing. For less than $50 for every ticket in the space. And so, you know, that part has been about finding designers that are working for a tenth of their rate because they also think it's beautiful. So we have the best lighting designers and sound designers and projections video designers and a stage manager and associate producers. All of these people are working for a tenth of their normal rate as like a community production.
When you have something that's well put together, like in every facet, you have the play is first of all awesome. And then the actors are awesome. And then you have an intimate space. It's like the people will start coming because, you know, I was just thinking about this the other day. It's like there are so many times where I get paid super well to do something that is just not that, you know, it's like, and then the things that I'm like really passionate about, you may not always see that great pay structure built in for that, you know, and it's like, but that's how it is. It's like when you're making art, like the thing that you love is sometimes the thing that is not going to yield the most. And then somebody hears about you and then they want you to play or do something else. That's like a very well-funded thing. And you're like, this is not the same, but it will be a different price and I'll make a lot more money doing this. But it's that passion project thing that is why we do the thing. And what propelled you to also direct it?
I want to just add to what you just said. One of my designers actually is paid quite well doing his design job for like a corporation. Right. The reason why he did take a tenth of his rate to do this is he was and took a week off of that job, took vacation for that job, is he was like, man, I want to get in there with you and do some creative stuff and make some fun and like, you know, do it. And we did that. So that's really great. So basically the story is Kosser Muhammad, who's a fantastic actress. You can see her on the animated series Jurassic Park that's out right now. She plays Yaz. She's in The Flash. She's in the Netflix show Mo. So Kosser Muhammad, she's also in the sketch comedy troupe called The Get Brown. But she called me last year around maybe September, I would say, maybe August, and was like, you know, I really want to do some theater. And I know you're so experienced in theater. Like, do you have any thoughts for me? And I was like, yeah, I thought of this play. But then I was like, but it's two men. It's always been two men. So, you know, but here it is. I sent it to her anyway. And she was like, well, I really love it. And I was like, all right, well, let me see if I can find a way. I don't know the playwright personally. So I was like, let me see if the playwright would be down. Cause you have to get the playwright's approval to do a gender swap. Like,
that. Oh, I didn't know that. You do.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you do it without them knowing and they find out gender, race, ethnicity, anything that sort of like changes the story, they can shut it down.
Oh, I did not know that. That's
yeah. I mean, even if like there's a character that's written as 40 years old and you cast like an 80-year-old to play it, that changing the meaning, they can shut it down. Didn't want to risk that. Yeah, we didn't want to risk that. So this is a funny story. I have a friend who is actually doing a play with the playwright at the time.
Wow.
And I called the friend and I said, I will fly to Chicago if you can organize a meeting. And this friend was like, I don't know if I can organize a meeting, but I can schedule a bump, you know? And that's literally what we did. Like, we had breakfast an hour before rehearsal.
You're like a bump, like a cocaine line?
No, I mean a bump like a, like, oh, there you are. Hi, I'm Bezod.
That is crazy.
Yeah. So we had a breakfast like 1 hour before the rehearsal started. And then she was like, we should walk over to the theater. And I walked over to the theater. And then it was like, oh, hello. Nice to meet you. I want to do a play. And so I wrote them an email. They were very responsive and it's been really great. And so the directing fell into my lap because it was like, I have a concept for this play. I've been thinking about it for 10 years. I know how I want to strip it down. I can't give a concept to someone else to direct. It's my concept. Yep. I've been teaching scene study in LA for 5-6 years now, which is directing. Yep. I've directed some, you know, stage readings and some shorts and things. And I felt like it's time for this to be my directorial debut. And it was scary as hell. And I was nervous as hell last week, but it was so fulfilling this week to do it.
You know what? You are a director because you know the craft of acting. And you look at some of the best directors, and most of them were actors or are actors, and they make great stuff because they know how to be in the story and they know what it is to see the story from the outside. And that is just a tremendous leap. It's just one of those things where it's like, and here's the other thing, and I know you're like this too. For me, like, I've had camera crews come in for certain things, for shows, for whatever. And it never comes out right. It just never has come out right. And when you have that control to have everything at your beck and call and you make the call for the shots, like, okay, I want this to be this. Or it is so gratifying because you're like, okay, you're going to have these obstacles where you're not going to have the thing or you're not going to have whatever that you need. But you are also well-versed in finding solutions. And that's what great directors do. And you are already that as a person. So
you're right. You're spot on. It's like, you have to have clear vision, but then you have to trust. Like, I was like, this is what I'm thinking. And then the projections designer might be like, well, it's a 10K loom with a 4 projector with a 4 lens and a this and a shutter and a dowser and a cord and a safety. And I'm like, I don't know what any of that means. I trust that you know what that means, but this is the vision. Like, and there's a lot of delegating and trusting of being like, hey, we got frog sounds. I don't like the frog sounds. And telling the sound designer, I think we need different frog sounds. And having the designer be like, what kind of different frogs? I'm like, I want a frog sound with more this type of quality. And then like 3 hours later, it's like, that was a perfect frog sound. Thank you for that frog sound. All right, moving on, you know?
Yes. Like, all those little details that make the thing the thing. And I'm sure you're seeing it now. Like, you just had opening weekend last weekend. You're seeing how all the little nights kind of make up different nuances and different moments that you're like, okay. And that's the beauty of also doing a play. It's like, there's momentum. It's like, week to week, show to show, there's chemistry that develops in how it's like wearing a new jacket and then you break it in and you just kind of like have that thing where it's like, oh, it's got wheels now. Okay, let's move. Yeah.
And there's something with the audience. You're like, and so Sunday audience was Super Bowl, but so we were like, oh, it's going to be hard to get people on Super Bowl Sunday, but it was also my birthday. Thank you. And so what we did was we moved the show back, you know, like you said, problem solving. We pushed the show back an hour so that the Super Bowl would be done. At least the halftime show would be done. Right. And then we made it my birthday show. And so that audience obviously was very different than my Monday night audience. That's a different audience. You know what I mean? And so, but it's still a good show. It's just a different show.
Well, I assume it was more rowdy. It had to be a little bit more
rowdy. Sunday was a little rowdy. Yeah. Like there was some laughter on some stuff. And like, guys, this intimate thing, intimate doesn't just mean small audience. Like,
right.
If you're in the front row and you stretch your leg, you can trip me. Like we're there. We're right there. I know. You've probably performed like that where like you can touch the guitar. You can touch it. If you touch it, you can touch the guitar, you know?
Yeah. But I love, there's something about that. I mean, sure, it's great to play in a bigger room that you're farther away from the audience. It's a bigger stage. But there's something about, and I talk about this a lot, and I know you know what I'm talking about. When you can see the faces and you can feel the laughter. I mean, I'm not just saying you hear the laughter. You can feel the vibration of the laughter. It becomes like so much more of an intimate experience, but almost that much better because you're so vulnerable. It's like when people ask me like, oh, what's it like to play in front of a lot of people? I'm like, those are the easy shows. The shows where you're playing an intimate crowd in a small where everybody's jammed together, there's a real vibe in that. And it's so palpable that I feel like that is what lends itself to making it special. So I know you're experiencing that show to show, like just how people can be a part of it, just being so close to it, you know? So tell me how that.
Yeah, it's. And the big shows, I feel the intensity of a group laughed. I've performed for thousands of people and I feel thousands of people laugh. That's fun. But what's here is like, I can hear the, oh man.
Yes.
Or the, oh, did you see that?
Totally. Totally.
I can feel that. Or I've even heard people like, there's a moment in the play, I won't spoil it, where there's like a sort of realization of what's about to happen. And sometimes some members of the audience get it before other members of the audience. So I can hear it trickle in. Oh no. Oh no. Like, it's like that person got it before that person, before that person, before that person, before that person. You can hear it, you know?
Right.
But one thing I'm really interested in is like, you know, I'm not a musician like you are, but I love music.
You love music.
I love music. Like I listen to music all day long. I don't do any task without music playing. That's from awesome. Washing the dishes to
why we connect, bro. This is exactly
like everything, right? I always have music playing. And as director, I was in charge of the music for all the transitions and the pre-show and thing. And sometimes like one of the sound designer one day was like, hey, do you want me to put together some songs for the music that's playing as the audience is coming in? And I was like, no, I'm going to curate the order and length and what this is going to be curated. You know what I mean? And you're going to like this, Nikhil. I've thought about if it's 1653, is there music that doesn't have any electronic amplification? So I want real sounds. I want like, and what I mean, like not an electric guitar or like a synthesizer, right?
All analog, you know, it's like, yes, the real rootsy stuff.
Exactly. And then like there is this role is this play is interesting because we have a woman playing a lead for the first time. And there's a Indian woman named Abhi Sampa from the UK who is like a qawwali singer, but she's a woman and she's like the best in a field that's usually dominated by men. So we have like music from her and she's incredible.
Chills, man. I got chills.
Yeah. And so like there's a violin solo in this thing that every single person was like, that's too long. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck that. Sit in it.
Yes.
And so, Nikhil, you're going to like this. And I'm giving a little bit of a spoiler away, but there is a, this might not sound long, y'all, but in the world of theater, this is incredibly long. There is a 90-second musical like overture in this.
Love it. Love it.
Just for like people's reference, most music in a play for a transition is like 8 seconds.
8 seconds, 9 seconds, 10 seconds, at the most.
This is 90. And I'm like, living it, y'all. Sit in it. Let it envelop you. And I think after 8 seconds, people are like, oh, this is going to keep going. And then after 30 seconds, they're like, oh, he wants me to sit in this motherfucker. And I'm like, yeah, I want you to sit in it.
Well, it's also like, you're the chef. And that's what I like about art. It's like, yeah, you want us to sit in it. And that is a powerful statement because people don't do that now. It's like, exactly. Like people adhere to the trends or like, oh yeah. Oh, people, I got all this feedback. You know how much I get that feedback all the time. And I'm like, great. Thank you. Start your own band. Let me know when I can come see your show. I'll be there front and center to support. And then I'll walk out and not give you one note because it's your show. You know what yeah. I mean? That's the beautiful thing about art. It's like, I think it's silly when people give those notes. Cause it's like, yo, this is your thing. Like make art, like make yeah. the art and make it how you want it to be. Let us sit in it and get uncomfortable. Let us feel like, man, this is too long. Because you know what? You're going to see people squirming a little bit and being uncomfortable and wanting to pick up their phone or like wanting to, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like wanting the scene to happen. And it's like, that has energy.
What I'm doing with it is like you were just in the lobby taking pictures at a step and repeat, talking yeah. to a friend you haven't seen in a long time. Hey, we should get dinner. Hey, yeah, let's get drinks after. I'll talk to you after. Let's take a picture. Let's post it on Instagram. Let's take a picture of the program, in the lobby. You're doing all that. And then you have 90 seconds to just.
Yes. I love it. Oh, man. And especially if it's the opening, it's the overture.
It's the opening. Yeah.
That's so appropriate. It's like, oh, okay, this is not going to be, you know, it's like, it would kind of be like a high school thing to do like a quick, like, da 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 da, you know, like, no, you're like, you're an artist. You're yeah. like, let me take you to a place. Let me make you sit in the stew to create an atmosphere before yeah. the starts. And that's art to me. So I mean, I got chills thinking about it because I love that we're doing this interview right now because I was going to come see your show anyways, but now I'm getting these little details that I...
Yeah, it's going to be fun to have you.
That I won't tell anybody that I bring, but I'll see those things. And that's part of directing, producing, starring in the thing is being in control of those details because you've been to many plays. You have been in many plays, but you have also been to many movies, plays, shorts, etc., and you see the holes, you see the things that yeah. are chasing the trends or are chasing, you know, commercialism. And it's like, that's not really the most badass artists to me. They're not doing that. You know, it's like, yeah. like so many underground street artists, for example, that are like, man, they're just going to do the thing. And the moment is on the wall and it's gone by the end of the day. And it's like, to me, I'm like, that's so deep to me. It's like, yeah. it's like you prepare to make something, you do all this orchestration, it goes up on a wall and then somebody's painting over it by the end of the day or trashing it. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
I love when art is just like for artists, you know, it's like, and that's what it sounds like you're making it for. You want people to enjoy it, but you're also making it for artists because you're an artist.
Yeah. I really am proud of it. I'm like genuinely proud of it. Like today is my first day off from the play since November. Today is my first day off. And now here I am doing this interview, but you know, I got to sit today and be like, oh, we made something really cool. Like we made something really cool. And not a lot of people are going to see this play. If I sell out every single ticket, then like just over 1,000 people will see this play.
Yeah, that's not what it's about. It's like,
yeah, exactly. And I'm like, and then I think about something. I'm like, that's 1/20th of one Laker game. Right. You know what I mean? But I'm like, but 1,000 people will have a cool fucking experience.
Yeah,
and It's just really great. I should add, I don't know what your listener base is, but it's definitely not for children.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
Our listener base is mostly adults and world. And
don't bring your kids.
Well, let me ask you this too. Is it something that you think you would do again? Would you do another run? Or is this like, I want to finish this run and I want to put it away for a long time until
I would love to do it again.
Okay. All right. So that's cool. That like
I would love to take this to Chicago. I would love to take this to New York. I would love to take this to Boston. I would love to take this to Houston. I would love to take this to San Francisco. And also like because it's stripped down the way it is, we can.
Right.
Like we can. Like I don't, you know, some big shows like, well, I need an arena. I need 5,000 speakers and LEDs. I need about 22 lights, a venue. I need me and Kosser, costumes that fit in a bag. Like we could go touring with this thing. And if there's any, you know, producers or investors out there who are interested in that, you know, or well, promoters who want to bring us to your city, let's do it.
You know, I also find that it's like, you know, promoters and investors, they need to be on the ground finding these kind of projects.
Of course.
Just annoys me that because it's like there's so much stuff that they're investing in and putting up. And it's like, this is not that great. There's actually somebody I should introduce you to. He I don't know him that well, but he does a lot of stuff on Broadway. But, you know, he's Indian, too. And I won't announce his name, but he does a lot of stuff that's hyped. And I'm like, man, you got to do stuff that's not hyped. That is real art, you know?
That guy that you're talking to him about, that we're not going to say his name, he came last night.
Did he?
He came last night. Yeah.
And so at least he's coming to see your stuff.
Yeah, he came last night. And we didn't talk about anything after about like that, but he did come last night. So, yeah.
Well, that's cool.
And what's interesting is, I didn't invite him. He was there. Maybe he was invited another way, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, that's amazing. Well, now it's about to go up and seeing if bite.
Of course.
Thing, it's like
he's a nice guy. Nice guy.
I just love when real art is displayed like that. Like I'll tell you, I went to a play, and it was at the Kirk Douglas Theater. Have you ever been to the Kirk Douglas Theater?
I have.
That's actually one of my favorite theaters in this city.
And yeah, it's the smallest theater at Center Theater Group. It's in Culver City. So yep. Center Theater Group has three theaters. It's Amundsen, Taper, and Kirk. And the Kirk is the small one, yeah.
And I saw a show 22 or 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
One-man show. And it was a hip-hop show. And the guy basically, it was a one-man show telling a story, kind of like a parallel story to an unknown Eminem, okay?
Oh.
This guy told this story with hip-hop and rap that he wrote, that he did all the music for, and he changed characters in the play using flashlights and using lights. Like he would distort his face and become different characters and then do songs that represented what was happening in the scene and then go back into a different character. It was one of the most brilliant things I've ever
seen. Remember what it was?
I have to find out the name of it, but I think about that play almost every day. And like, I didn't meet the guy afterwards, but I was just so shook from it. And I think about it every time I see something, I think about it. And it's just because it was so good and so well thought out and so like unlike anything I've ever seen.
I wonder if you're talking about a show called Clay.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
So, one man hip hop show.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a guy named Matt Sachs.
Yeah, I think that could be it.
Yeah, I think you're talking about a show named Clay. Say it again.
Did you see it in New York or?
No, I didn't, but I know about it because I know a lot about one man shows, and so yeah.
Well, this I think that you could be right. He's a white guy that did.
Yeah, Matt Sachs, yeah.
And I think about this play all the time because it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. I've seen one man plays, like, you know, so. Tell me when you did this and you took it on and you made it intimate. It's two characters and you're already flipping the gender of one of them.
Yeah.
Outside of that, maybe it's logistics or maybe it's just like planning the whole thing out. What were some of the biggest obstacles?
Because
I know you had many. Wearing all those hats, you definitely hit all of them. You know?
Yes, there was a lot of obstacles. So I'll tell you a couple of fun ones. Well, one is the first thing is the show is written with massive amount of spectacle in it because the show was written at large theaters. So the first three theaters to do it were the Atlantic Theater in New York, which is a huge budget, large theater. Same thing. Then it went to Steppenwolf with the same director, which is the largest regional theater in America, as one of the best. And then over here at the Geffen in LA, they did it at the large theater at the Geffen LA about 11 years ago. So those were 10 years ago. So those were the three big productions, and those are budgeted productions. They have rotating stages and things that fly down and all sorts of things like that. And not only do they have budget, but they have staff. They have a staff of 40 and technicians and lighting designers and marketers and programmers and HR and costume designers and like all sorts of things. So the first thing is, because we don't have any of that, we can't fake doing the spectacle. You have to change the concept.
Yes.
So it's like, if I just have a guitar and a piano, I can't fake having an orchestra. I have to change the concept.
Yes.
And so I had to change the concept. So instead of doing the things that the playwright says, which is sometimes, like, I'll give you one example. The playwright will say, 1,000 birds fly overhead. And I'm like, well,
where are we going to get those?
Yeah. And in a even big theater, you can sort of create the effect of that, but I can't do that. So I have to change. Well, what does the effect of 1,000 birds mean? What is the feeling that incurs, and how can I incur that feeling in a different way? So a lot of it was like dreaming about concepts and seeing what works and what doesn't work. The real obstacle is I can't see myself from out of body. So sometimes it would be like, freeze. Then I'll step outside to look at something and then come back in, or I had a rehearsal me and stuff like that. But then over this last week, we had this beautiful projections design, and we had projector problems.
Of course. It wouldn't be art if you didn't have some kind of obstacle like that.
So we had projector problems, and I learned so much about projector bulbs last week. Let me tell you, it's not as, you can't just go to a Best Buy and buy a projector bulb. Let me tell you, you got to find a bulb. It has to be the right bulb for the right loom, for the right thing, for the right size. And some of those bulbs are only in Florida, and you have to overnight them. And that means you lose 2 days of your tech with no projector. And that's what happens.
Wow.
So, yeah.
But you know what? That makes you like versatile, and it also helps you in any other capacity. You're the guy for projectors now. It's like,
yeah, yes, I know projectors.
And it's tough though. It's like, man, I've been through it with recordings. It's like, we've had tape machines go out. We've had tape go out. We've had computers shut down.
Mm-hmm.
You name it, it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, tubes get blown, whatever it is, amps go out. And it's just like, it's like art is about finding solutions, and it's usually the band leader or the director or the person in charge. Maybe it's a producer. And when you're wearing all those hats, it's just a miracle when it gets done. Like just the fact you finished the run last weekend, I'm sure you were like, success, you know, it's like
for sure
for three people in the audience, but I know you sold out the whole weekend. But I mean, just getting the thing done is the hardest part of this process, because it tests your faith. It tests your like mindset. It tests your drive. It tests your heart for sure. And it tests your patience more than anything. And it's like the fact that you got through all of that, did you feel like timelines were being diminished? Like were hurt? Like, 'cause I know that happens. Even though your cast is small, you want to accomplish a certain amount of things in a finite time. How did you budget your time, and where did you feel like things were sucking that time right out the window? Or where did you feel like, oh my God, we're ahead of schedule, which when you say that, it's almost like you're about to shoot yourself in the foot by saying it.
The ahead of schedule stuff was like back to the concept. 'Cause I've been thinking about it for so much. Like, you know, that's like, I was dreaming about it. I was waking up and driving in the car and thinking about it, or honestly, the music. Like that was the one thing where I really didn't take anybody's input. I was like, nah, I know the music. I know what the music is. I know. Like the music is right. You know, people would send me something with like a synth drum, like some sort of drum machine in it. And I was like, wrong. This is wrong. This is not what I want. This is not what I want. You know what I mean? Or, you know, anyway, we found the music. But I think directing is often being like deciding when to move on, because if you chase perfection, you might get perfection for that thing, but now you've abandoned 20 other things.
Right.
So it's sort of like, it's not that you settle and say, this is good enough. It's not that, but it's deciding, okay, I have to move on.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. It's time to move on. Like, because I have 3 hours left and we haven't touched this thing yet. So it's time to move on. And it's about going, it's not, and it sounds like settling, but it's not settling. It's going, that's what it is. Now let's move on.
Yes. There's a saying, it's like, art is finished once it's ready to be abandoned.
And well, that's cool. Yeah.
So good, because it's like, it's finished. It's like, I'm ready to leave it alone and have nothing to do with it.
Because it's never finished. Yes.
Yeah. Because it's never finished. Because you can go, I mean, honestly, I could spend 5 years on a record. I could spend 5 years on a song, and just the same as you doing a show. It's like, this could have been a 5-year process for you to get it right before it runs. You know what I mean? But it's like,
people don't know the level of detail you can work on something like, y'all, when you come to this show, we have thought about where the chairs are within a few inches of if they're in windows of somebody else. We have put cushions on certain chairs that are lower than others. We have thought about the font of the sign outside that says silence your cell phones. We have thought about the photographs on the way to the lobby of the theater. We have thought about the light on our posters. We have thought about the detail that we have thought about.
Right.
For your experience. We've thought about, well, if I do this, that's cool for this person, but that's actually bad for that person. So we're going to move it to this person. It's like, we have thought about every single aspect. We've even thought about what candies are we selling in concession that provide the smallest amount of noise for the people around. We have found ways to, we're not going to give you chips in a bag. We're going to give you chips on a paper plate so that it doesn't crinkle. You know, like we've thought about everything.
That's amazing. That is rare. And you can do that probably also because it's in a small, intimate space and you have to do space. Yeah. So how did you find the space and know, okay, this is where we should do this?
Interestingly enough, we looked at so many spaces.
I'm sure.
We looked at so many spaces. And we had some qualifiers about location and stuff like that. But when we went into this one, we have a team of four, like I said at the time, and I was like, which has become five. But I said, guys, I think this is it. And of course they were always keeping me back from my brashness. And they're like, well, okay, good. Let's keep looking. And then like that night I was like, I think that was it. I think we should put the deposit down like this. I think we should do it. And like a day later it was like, all right, let's do it. Like, let's lock this down.
And or in a space, is it the seating? Is it the parking? Is it the, what is it? Is it all the things? Is it the stage?
Yeah. A lot of it is about like, it's actually about the setup of where the seats are. So a lot of theaters are just like, it's like a rectangle and one side of the rectangle is the stage and the other 70% of the rectangle is the seats. I don't love that type of theater. I like where the audience is sort of like almost all around you. So this is if you imagine a circle, a semicircle, the back wall is the stage. The audience is all the way around. So we are being seen on a 180 degree angle all the way around. They can see our sides. They can see every part of it. And so, so I have to direct in triangles actually. So if you think about like a semisphere with audience all around, there's only a triangle left in the middle. So I'm directing in triangles. And your viewers might not be able to see, but there's a triangle on my arm. I think in triangles. So, I was really like you'll see a lot of triangular figures and this venue also has a large scrim up for our projections.
So that affected.
Yeah.
Asian?
Yeah. I really wanted projection design. It was something important to me.
Why? Because you wanted a visual to go along with what was happening on stage.
Yeah, because like I said, those big budget theaters have rotating sets.
Right.
They have like practical sets that can come up and come down and literally like the couch will sink into the floor and the window will raise up into the sky and all that. And I don't have that, but digitally we can create a lot of things. And if you get a really, really good projections designer like I did, Paul DeZiel, we didn't create anything photorealistic. It's feeling, it's vibe, it's tone, it's motif, it's color, it's texture, it's grit, it's what it is, but it's invoking stuff. I don't know if you've seen any of our photos, Nikhil. I'll give you some press photos, but some of them are like, really? It's funny. I'm in it. So like, it wasn't until I saw photos where I was like, oh, that looks good.
Right. Right. Well, you need.
Oh, that looks really good. You know?
Yes. And was it intentional to have photos taken certain parts so that you could use them for press? Or was it just kind of organic? Like, I didn't know you took a picture during that. Like, that's. No,
we brought in a photographer to do a dress rehearsal. So that, and the reason why we did that, a lot of plays, you know, they hired the photographer when there's an audience, but then they have to be in the back to not disturb the audience. Right. We brought the photographer in earlier so they could walk on stage with us and get cool angles and get up in our face and not disturb the audience. So we actually got really, really, really great photos. The only thing that we have been really conscious about is I have not released any photos to the public or press past the first 30 minutes of the play.
Why is that?
Spoilers.
Okay. You don't want them past that.
I don't want you to see past the first 30 minutes of the play. You're going to see it. This is what you see in the pictures. And then things change. So I don't want you to know that that's coming when you come in.
Is it two acts or is it one act?
One act, 85 minutes.
Wow.
Followed by a post-show discussion. We do post-show discussions after every performance, about 15 minutes with both me and Kosser. And sometimes we have special guests. So we have Taz Ahmed coming on Sunday at 2. Rajiv Menon, contemporary and art gallerist, is coming on the 22nd. We have an organization called Silver Thread, which is a Muslim organization, coming on Friday the 20th. So on those nights, we have special post-show discussions.
Awesome.
But other than that, we have a post-show discussion every time.
But how did you think about being that strategic about who would be on each discussion?
People that showed passion, people who were like, hey, we want to be a part of this. And wow. I was like, well, what if your community wants to come hear from you and they can come talk with us and it aligns with the themes of the play? And but we're doing a discussion regardless of who's there. We do a discussion every night for 50 minutes. It's important to talk about it with the people. And dude, 99% of people stay.
That's awesome. As they should.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like 10 people stay. Like, it's more like 3 people leave and everybody else stays.
Right. But I mean, those are the things that are like you remember. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You remember the art and then you remember those Q&As afterwards and the questions that were asked. I saw Val Kilmer. He did one-man play. And that was in also a theater in Culver City. It wasn't at the... It wasn't at the Kirk Douglas. It was at another one. And one of the coolest things he did, at the end of the play, he sat in a chair and had his makeup artist take off his makeup. And he did a Q&A about the project, Mark Twain. Anybody could ask him about anything. And it was one of the coolest things I'd ever seen throughout the entire play. Like, the play was awesome, but that was actually one of the coolest
things. That's his Mark Twain performance, right?
Yep. And he actually wanted to make it into a movie, and he tried. And I don't know if he didn't get the funding or if he didn't get exactly what he wanted, but, man, the one-man play was awesome. He actually went into the audience and was, like, goofing with the audience before the play even started in full costume. Like, it was, like, one of the coolest things. And this is what I love about L.A., too. It's, like, theater is intimate. Like, that's the greatest thing about it. And it's, like... when you see art up that close and you see a story that you haven't explored or discovered, this is why we live in the cities, because you're not going to see this in a Springfield, Illinois. You're not going to see this in, you know...
Springfield every other state.
Any other Springfield in any other state, exactly. Yeah. But you can see this in a city where there is a community, where there is representation, and it's also like... you know, you've been inclusive, I'm sure, on every level.
Every level.
Making sure that all the things are what the person should be. Tell me, what was your intent, and, you know, how intentional did you want it to be for it to meet those levels for you?
Honestly, it was easy for me because my community is so diverse. Like, I don't have to go searching. But of course it was important to me. And it's funny enough, part of that diversity is that there's like a bunch of white dudes on my team too. Right. Like there's some white dude designers on my team, 'cause they're great fucking designers. And then there's like, my team happens to be four of our five producers outside of me are women, brown women, all brown women. That's not because I was looking for brown women, like some sort of DEI thing. It's because they're incredible.
Right.
They're just, I wouldn't want anybody else.
Right.
And so it's funny, like, here's what's interesting. I didn't for a single second think about someone's demographical box, but my group is so diverse because I have a diverse community.
Right.
So it's like, it's math. If you know a bunch of diverse people and you just grab from that group, it's like if you just have a bunch of M&Ms and they're all the colors and you grab 10 of them, they're going to grab different colors of M&Ms.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? I don't just own yellow M&Ms, so I'm not just going to eat yellow M&Ms. You know what I mean? And so
us too, it's like, that's important because we know what it is to be that M&M. That's not always welcome to the party. So it's like, the weird thing is like, you could have easily made this an all South Asian communal project,
yeah.
But I feel like you're an artist and it's like, you know, those lines don't matter. It's like, you want everybody to be represented, but it's like, it's also important to have it be a communal thing where everybody is welcome to the table.
You know, one of my designers, I won't call them out, but one of my designers, I do references if I don't know you personally. I reach out, what was it like working with this person? What was it like working with this person? So for one of my designers, I reached out to directors I trust and was like, hey, I saw that this person worked with you. What do you think? I saw that this person worked with you. What did you think? Every single person I reached out to about this one designer was like, you got to work with them. They're the best. You got to work with them. They're the best. And I thought to myself, okay, so how do I honor a brown woman in Khosra Muhammad, a brown man in myself, the brown women producers, any better than giving them the best designer that everybody says is the best? And I got to work with this designer. So the way I honor them is to use them and not just go like look for somebody else because they're brown or whatever.
Yes, that's exactly it. It's like there's a certain level of like, it's not about anything other than ability. It comes down to just, you want players that can play. You want everybody that is exceptional at what they do to be a part of it because it raises the vibration of everything. Everybody, every part of it. Let's talk about promotion because this is a hard thing. And this,
yeah.
Tell me like what has been the hardest part of promoting this, getting the word out, making it a welcoming thing, an exciting thing for people, all communities to want to see. Tell me what that is giving you, that kind of edge or an uphill battle.
You know, I'll be very honest. It's been really challenging. Like the big reviewers won't come.
Interesting.
The LA Times won't come. And I'm calling them out right here. LA Times, come. Yeah. And you know what? I feel it's brave of us to do. We're a small group with very limited budget. We're independent. I'm not saying come and review me positively. Come and review it.
Yes.
If you want to tear it apart, tear it apart. If you want to build it up, build it up. I'm putting ourselves on the line and saying, review us honestly, but come review us.
Right.
Like, come review us. We've reached out through all official channels, so please come, LA Times. Like, come. And it is hard to sell tickets in this town. And I understand why. There's because of what you said earlier, there's so much to do.
Yep.
There's so much to do. It's actually easier to sell tickets to a show in Springfield, Illinois, because there's probably just one show going on in Springfield, Illinois, versus all these things. And then the other thing is there is also a lot of bad theater. And a lot of people went to a bad show a year ago and they're like, oh God, I don't want to go to that again.
Right.
And I'm like, I know you kind of got to step out on faith and hope that this one's better.
Are and it's like, dude, you know how many
times? Yeah, I know.
And oh, it's like, Yeah.
You know, and I think to myself, I'm like, you've gone to a bad movie, but you still went to a movie the following weekend because you know that all movies are bad.
Well, you know, it's different though. For some reason, plays, it's live art that gets tanked with one bad apple. It's like, it's tanked. But movies, no. A hyped concert, no. It's
exactly.
Like,
yeah, you've been to a bad concert. That doesn't mean the next concert you go to is going to be bad.
Restaurants that like
you exactly
go out, but I for live art for some reason it gets this bad rap. Like,
yeah,
one thing sucks, then it's like, I don't want to go to this again.
Yeah, I've been to a bad play, I don't need to go to theater anymore, you know. And so, there's that, and so we do fight that battle a little bit. But I want to offer something to every listener here. Every listener here, I'd like to give a 25% off discount code for the rest of the run.
That's awesome.
I don't know how to do that, but I can say it. It's capital BABUR25. That's capital B, capital A, capital B, capital U, capital R25. It's my character's name, Bobber25. And that's 25% off for the run. We have 8 performances left. Yes, 8 performances left. And so that's for every listener listening today.
Well, let's talk about the dates. What are the dates available that the show is running?
Okay, so we have this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with 2 shows on Sunday. So we have Friday at 8, Saturday at 8. It's a really good date show because you have stuff to talk about after, and it's cute and fun and funny and quick, and not, you know, you can go to dinner before or after. So we have a Friday at 8, we have a Saturday at 8, and then we have a Sunday at 2 and 7.
Okay. That's awesome.
That's the 4 shows this weekend. 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 7 o'clock. Then next week, the 20th, 21st, and 22nd, we have a Friday at 8, 2 shows on Saturday, Saturday at 2, Saturday at 8. And then we close up the 22nd at 7 p.m. So 8 shows left, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 o'clock, Sundays at 7 o'clock. With a 2 o'clock this Sunday and a 2 o'clock next Saturday.
Where can people get tickets?
GuardsPlayLA.com. 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 And that discount code will work.
Amazing. Behzad, I'm going to see this play. I will be the person. I will bring my crew.
Thank you.
Spread the word. Please send the ticket link
yes.
on your bio that you send.
Yep.
Go see this play. Guards at the Taj, correct? That's the name of it?
Guards at the Taj by Rajiv Joseph. Yep.
And it's at the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood.
That's correct. In the Marilyn Monroe Forum, the smaller space.
Amazing. So and one more time, the dates. One more time.
The dates are from now until February 22nd, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Awesome. Amazing. Behzad, I will see you in this play. I'm excited to see you in this play. Thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. I love all the things that you do. Keep doing the things that you do, okay? Keep
so much.
You know what I mean? That's what it's about. On behalf of myself, Sam, and Behzad, we'll see you guys next week. Go see this play. I'll be there. I won't tell you what night I'm going to be there, but I will be there. I wish you lots of luck, Behzad. I can't wait to see you in this. It's going to be amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We'll talk soon. I'll see you at the play, okay?
All right.
Lots of love. All right. We'll talk soon. We'll see you guys next week.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.